Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty, prosperity, and the highway to the north, this is Jim Holzel with Safety Wars. How's everybody doing out there tonight? Waiting for all the streamers to kick in and everything else. Just moseying on along here. Let's see. We're back. It's been a rough couple of weeks. If I told you what was going on with me, you wouldn't believe it. So I'm going to spare you. It's been crazy, crazy, crazy. Anyway. Everything's going great, otherwise. I just hit a very rough spot here with everything else that's going on. Jim, where have you been? Well, we've had all different types of things go on here that you would not believe, all right? If I told you, you wouldn't believe it. Well, what do you mean? Okay, let's see. Major health problem. We had chipmunk infestation. We had a moth infestation. We had baseball games, and congratulations to the Ballers for winning their division in USABL, North Central. I believe that's the division, North Central 12U. Little League. We had everything going on, tournaments. So things are calming down. I will be back on the air. I promise you, on the Safety FM, we're going to be on it more consistently. Anyway, long story short, with everything, it's been crazy. Everything has been crazy. The news has been crazy. The world is crazy. The financial aspects of the world are crazy. Everything is crazy. Got everything up and running now. We're working on a couple of things we're going to be sharing with you very, very shortly. And it has to do with making your life easier. Well, what do you mean, Jim, making your life easier? We'll be making that announcement in the next couple of weeks. Number one. Number two, summertime is here. What's the big thing going on? Well, they're screaming and yelling over heat stress here in the Northeast for like the last week. We have a heat wave coming. And I tell you what, it's not been easy on anything. So on any of us here with the heat wave coming in, you know, up here in New York. Now, I'm going to go in the Wayback Machine here to our March 19, 2021 program. I'm going to play it for you because it's really important here. It's very short, about 6 minutes, 44 seconds. Let's see if this is going to work. Hold on.
To our March 19th contain adult language, adult situations, and frank safety discussions. The names and certain details have been changed to protect the safe and the unsafe. But believe me, every item in here is true.
This is going to be a different type of episode today. On this show, we'll discuss some of what we deal with as safety professionals and how to manage those situations. Gaslighting. Today on Safety Wars with Jim Polzel. Today we're inspired by an article on BetterHelp.com by Mary Dean. What is gaslighting? A sneaky kind of emotional abuse. What is it? It's a psychological manipulation in which a person or a group covertly sows seeds of doubt in a targeted individual or group, making them question their own memory, perception, or judgment. A little bit of history here. Gaslight is a play written by Patrick Hamilton that was made into two movies, a 1940 version and a 1944 version starring Charles Boyer, Ingrid Bergman, and in her movie debut, an 18-year-old Angela Lansbury. She is also known for the TV show Murder, She Wrote. It won 2 Academy Awards. In short, this is a movie about a woman whose husband manipulates her into believing she is going insane. Over the last 60 years, the movie title has become a real psychological term and has made it into popular culture. Mary Deal lists 6 signs of gaslighting. Number 1, denial to confuse you. In other words, the gaslighter, the perpetrator, is failing to admit the truth. Number 2, they lie about you and to you. Number 3, their actions do not line up with their words. 4, fake praise or appreciation is directed at you. 5, projection, accusing someone else of your own shortcomings. And number 6, my favorite, good old-fashioned manipulation. One of my favorite stories is when I attended a class about 2 years ago. I was required to take this class on permit required confined spaces, among other things, for a project that was up and coming. Note that I have been teaching this particular section on permit required confined spaces for about 28 years. And to give you a little bit more background, one of my biggest clients paints pipelines and above ground storage tanks as a large part of their business. So this is an activity I'm familiar with. The instructor says, you need to follow the general industry standard for painting, and starts to go on and on and on. I waited for the break, and I tell him in private that painting is construction work and you need to follow the construction regulations. For management, it is markedly different than the general industry standards. For the worker, not so much, except for a couple of items. But we had a classroom of managers here, and they really needed to know what the difference was in the requirements. We make our way over to the OSHA definition of construction work. And right out of the regulation, I read, construction work means work for construction, alteration, and or repair, including, get this, painting and decorating. He says to me, that's not what that means. You don't know what you're talking about, etc., etc., etc. I showed him the letters of interpretation, and he had never heard of letters of interpretation. He said, all of that is baloney. I know what I'm talking about. I'm the instructor. You are the student. What started out as a private conversation ended up with him getting real aggressive in front of the entire class with me, which by this time had been filtering back into the classroom after the break. Essentially, he was gaslighting me. This wasn't a simple disagreement between professionals, which happens all the time, no matter what your profession is. This was actual gaslighting because he'd been doing it the entire week of the class to me and multiple people. So now I had a decision, either be silent and let him mislead the class further down a road that we didn't want to go down. In the past, I would have backed down. When faced with gaslighting, especially publicly, my default has become to call the person out on it, first privately, and then follow it up with management, if that doesn't get the results. So I got his boss on speakerphone. I explained the situation, and his boss thanked me and agreed with me and fixed the situation. This is not the first time anything like this has happened to us in the safety industry. It usually comes from managers who are not safety professionals. And we all have stories on this. The question is this. What do we do about it? I try to deal with the person directly and resolve our differences. If that doesn't work, and I'm going to tell you, it doesn't usually work. You've got to follow it up in the chain of command. Usually those who are gaslighters are also psychopaths, and one of the attributes of those folks is to play the victim and try to turn things around and say that you're the perpetrator. So you need to be very careful. And by the way, this is extremely time sensitive. You may not be able to do anything about this type of toxic person or work environment, and you need to decide what's best for you and your situation. As always, if you have been a victim of this behavior, it might be helpful to overcome it with counseling and maybe developing strategies to deal with these situations that do not reflect badly on you. Remember, they're often masters of argument, and they're looking for an argument with you to make you look bad. I know of one case where a worker actually committed suicide because of this behavior. If you need help, please seek it. Dealing with gaslighters, that is a battle we must all face in the safety ward. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Pulsey.
Boy, what a long way we've come with the program and with everything else here with this, right? That was from March 19, 2021, episode 8 of Safety Wars on gaslighting. Now you're going to say, well, Jim, what does that have to do with the current situation? Okay, so last week, and I wanted to get to this last week, things did not work out here. It's been covered widely in the news here, right? This is from the Times Union. Former Governor Andrew Cuomo on Tuesday told the Congressional Subcommittee that he was unaware of a controversial directive that had been issued by the State Department of Health in March 2020 directing nursing homes to accept residents even if they had tested positive for COVID-19. Right, and Cuomo's statement about his lack of knowledge of the directive was made to members of the Select Committee on Coronavirus Pandemic, which has been probing New York's handling of the healthcare crisis. So he did not even want this. I don't even know. I know there was probably a transcript made, but he didn't want any of this on video. And this was all negotiated for him to come on here and everything else. Right. The former governor's assertion that he was unaware of a directive that had been issued to ease pressure on New York hospitals as they became overwhelmed with patients echoes public statements that he made a month early in April 2020 when he claimed during a news conference that he was not familiar. Sources familiar with the now-closed FBI investigation, the Cuomo administration's decision to issue that directive said that a draft was edited for more than 2 days by the health department and members of the governor's office, which report was issued on March 25th, 2020. Cuomo's testimony that he was unaware of the directive, even informing weeks later, means that he was not briefed on or otherwise part of the discussions. In addition, former health department officials interviewed that federal investigation told the FBI that Cuomo was frequently on their calls with his coronavirus task force, but would usually only listen without speaking. At least one of those former officials told the FBI, a former secretary to the governor who was brought back to help with public health response, had a hand in editing drafts, right? Schwartz said on Tuesday that the allegation the editor reviewed a draft is false. And going on. So, and it's a lot of finger pointing here. I don't know what happened here. With this, I'm just reading this. I don't know whether this is true or not. But I've read several stories on this thing. Heard a lot of stuff. But nobody ever comes up with the actual memo here. Interesting. I got the directive right here. It took a little bit of digging here for me. You know, I don't want to pat myself on the back here. It took a little bit searching for this thing to get this going here. So here, let's put up the memo right now. See if this works. And I took myself out of the, photo here, but let's see. Let's try to get, everyone wants to talk about this and beat around the bush. Oh, the memo doesn't say this. The memo doesn't say that. The directive doesn't say this. But they never produced this. What I think happened was they had a lot of things, my opinion, a lot of balls in the air here. Whether Cuomo knew about this or not, I have no idea. But I suspect he had a lot going on and he delegated this stuff. And unless he had, he has my as I recall, he has a law background, which, you know, I think any first year, I'm not an attorney. I'm not playing one here on YouTube and on Safety FM. I'm not playing one at all. I'm just a guy who reads. But some of the comments I've read on this is that this did not say anything, let people in with COVID, and this said this. They're not, but they did not. Nobody produces this. And as a famous radio talk show host said, words mean things. Now, Jim, what do you mean words mean things? Yeah, words mean things. So here it is. This is from March 25th. Nursing home administrators, directors of nursing hospital discharge planners, New York State Department of Health. COVID-19 has been detected, right? In multiple communities, we have some front matter here. Hospital discharge planning staff and NHs, what an NH nursing home, NH, should carefully review this guidance with all staff directly involved in resident admission, transfer, and discharges. During this global health emergency, all nursing homes must comply with the expedited receipt of residents returning from hospitals to nursing homes. Residents are deemed appropriate for return to a nursing home upon a determination by the hospital physician or designee that the resident is medically stable for return. Keep that word in your, in that phrase in your head. Medically stable for return, right? Hospital discharge planners must confirm to the nursing home by telephone that the resident is medically stable for discharge. Remember that again, medically stable. Comprehensive discharge instructions must be provided by the hospital prior to the transport of a resident to the nursing home. Okay. No resident shall, meaning that you got to do it, shall be denied readmission or admission to the nursing home solely based on a confirmed or suspected case of COVID-19. Nursing homes are prohibited from requiring a hospitalized resident who is determined to be medically stable. Remember, medically stable to be tested for COVID-19 prior to admission or readmission. And it goes on and on. Some other stuff, you know, go normal. We've been through this. Okay, here's the question. All right, we got a question here. Let's see. Do I have a sound effect for that? Hold on. I used to. What does the word medically stable mean? What does that mean? Any idea? Any guess? Medically stable, there's no legal definition as far as I can tell. I've been looking for a week now since it's come out. No, it may be out there. I looked, you know, I had a call into a couple of attorneys. Is there a thing called medically stable? And it turns out that the closest definition officially that I could get is it's someone who is not getting better and who is not getting worse. That means they're medically stable. What does this not say, this directive? And then this is where people say, well, the directive was confusing. Okay, it was confusing. It didn't say that. Blah, blah, blah. Where it was confusing was this. What does medically stable mean? It's, you know, and words mean things. Inexact language caused the confusion here. Inexact language was used, in my opinion, by a bureaucrat somewhere. I don't know which one. I have no idea. Someone who had came up with this text sounds to me like they're threading the needle. It's medically stable. It's almost like it's safe. It's a safe workplace. Well, what does that really mean? What does medically stable mean? Beats the heck out of me. So, you know, very frustrating, right? On this whole thing. Now, it doesn't say contagious, not contagious. Had it said, make sure the person's not contagious, guess what? We wouldn't be having this conversation here in all likelihood. It was not contagious. So this directive said that they are not getting better or worse, but they are medically stable, the COVID-19 patients. And we could go through all these directives here. I had a whole list of them here on how vulnerable nursing home residents are and everything else. So it doesn't say contagious. So this directive essentially, I know how people read things, and I know when I'm writing plans, be very careful as a safety professional. What they ended up doing was letting in people who were contagious. Because they were, you could remember with COVID, you could be contagious and you could be medically stable. You're not getting worse, you're getting better. You can still be contagious. And that is where the issue is. But you go out there with, no, the people wouldn't, no, they're not out there with like, you know, alphabet soup, you know, network things, network shirts, or like, no, I'm getting a lot of good compliments by this, right? Safety Wars jersey, right? They're not out there saying, pointing this out, what the actual issue is. It's in the way this was written and the inexact language of medically stable. And we're going to go to our first commercial break here, and we will be back to you. It's Tuesday, right? Yes, Tuesday, June 18th. This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Blame fixes nothing. Blame fixes nothing.
So Oliver was a little bit too busy today to do the actual news broadcast. So we're going to do just go right to it. But, you know, what do you think? Tell me, folks, what do you think about this? Am I right? Am I wrong? What have you? You got to write things more exact. Now, I understand I am coming from hindsight bias and Monday morning quarterback. I get that. But we have to file this away for the future. And this is a lesson learned. The lesson learned is be careful what you write when you're writing these directives or your emails or anything else. Number one. Number two is file this away. So the next time we have a pandemic, when we will have another pandemic, next time we have a pandemic outbreak or something, you're going to say, hey, think back. Hey, how do we do this? Now, my hope, right, is in the future that we have lessons learned. I really hope the agencies are going through lessons learned because I went through lessons learned here with this. Now, we're going to go back to our some of our news stories here. I think we might have covered some of them on our last program. It's hard to remember here. Keep it straight. And but for whatever reason, I think OSHA's been on vacation also with these press releases being so far behind here. Okay, I know we covered that one. All right. Here we have Illinois contractor exposes employees to deadly fall hazards in a Hanover subdivision. And let's increase that. It's from Region 5. Illinois federal workplace inspectors found an Illinois construction contractor cited seven times since 2020, again exposed employees doing framing work to the risk of deadly falls from elevation at two homes under construction at Hanover Park in December 2023 and February 2024. That's a 3-month span, right? inspectors with OSHA going on. I'm not going to mention the name of the company, worked at heights of up to 20 feet without adequate fall protection. OSHA identified the violations in December and February at two nearby work sites on blah, 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 and the company name, two willful, two repeat, two serious violations. The agency has proposed $264,407 in penalties. Again, nobody apparently got hurt or killed here. And as part of the news release, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that in 2022, 1,056 construction workers died on the job, with 423 of those fatalities related to falls from elevation, slips, and trips. Slips or trips. Let's see what those are. 23 pages. Wow. Residential construction, right? So this was residential, and 6 feet or higher, you got to have some kind of fall protection here, guys. They were exposed to a 20-foot fall. Going on and on, proposed penalties, $124,219 that was a willful. And this was for the one in in February. So this was after they had already found out, apparently, from before. $124,000. Wouldn't have been cheaper to buy fall protection equipment, folks. Citation 2, item 1, type of violation, repeat other. The employer shall verify compliance with paragraph A of this section by preparing a written certification record. You need to have, again, if you're a trainer, you have to have the employees trained, the date of the training, the signature of the person who conducted the training, and many other records on that. Make sure that's on there. $1,774. So apparently, So again, let's say that you, now this is an important thing. We're dealing with this now. Let's say you do most of your training through weekly safety meetings. Right. If you fall under the process safety management standard, there's really comprehensive training records that have to go in there. Right. Duration of training, who attended, topics, an agenda, and all that stuff. Now, let's say you're doing a weekly safety meeting type of thing, which some people do. What are they looking for? They're looking for on that sign-in sheet, maybe that you use, the date of the training, the signature of the person who conducted the training, or the employer. If the employer relies on training conducted by another employer or completed prior to the effective date of this section, the certification record shall indicate the date the employer determined the prior training was adequate rather than the date of actual training. Okay, great. So, again, they got, if you do training, you better have records. Here we have 1774. So for that one in February, $125,993. This is the one over in December, it looks like. Again, let's see what they got here. They might have been told to get training then, and they didn't do it. That may, you know, and then they came up with training documentation things. Citation 1, item 1A, serious. $12,421, personal fall arrest systems when stopping a fall shall be rated such that an employee can neither free fall more than 6 feet nor contact any lower level. Again, improper rigging. All right, here. Meaning, citation 1, item 1B, no fine here. On the attachment point of the body belt, then why are they using body belts? Shall be located in the center of the wearer's back. The attachment point of the body harness shall, they should be wearing harnesses, shall be located in the center of the wearer's back near the shoulder level or above the wearer's head. On or about December 11th, an employee performing construction at heights exceeding 6 feet was wearing a personal fall arrest harness where the attachment point was not located in the center of the wearer's back. Again, where was it attached? Are they wearing that harness properly? Then we have citation 2, item 1, type of violation, willful serious. And it's a 6 foot fall protection rule in construction, $124,219. Citation 3, item 1, it's a repeat. again with the certification records. And we had a citation for item one, banned electric cords for cables. Now, if they go back in the future, which I suspect since they have repeat and willful violations, now the citation for item one, other than serious, now becomes a willful or a repeat violation. And it's not going to be $0. I have a sneaking suspicion of that. All right. So, let's do our next story. Now, I'm going to go over here. All right. And we always talk, and I'm guilty of this as much as the next person. We always talk about 1910 general industry, 1926 construction, 1915 maritime, 1917, which is also maritime, and 1918, and I believe it's 1928 for agriculture. There's a lot of other OSHA regulations out there. Tons of them. Now you're going to say, well, where are you thinking here? There is something called, now you look and you see what the other regulations are, and that is the, we're pulling it up right here, the 1977 standard. What is the 1977 standard? All right, so standard number 1977. Is this showing at all? Yes, it is. Scroll on down, and it is discrimination against employees exercising rights under the Williams-Steiger Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970. Now, if you are a outreach trainer, this needs to be in the outreach training here. I'm not, you know, with this. So as far as this, so here's our table of contents. Purpose of this part. Purpose of this part to make available in one place interpretations of various provisions of Section 11C of the Act, that means the OSHA Act, which will guide Secretary of Labor in performance of his duties. Therefore, they're under, unless and until otherwise directed by authority of the decision of the courts, are concluding upon re-examining interpretation that it is incorrect. Persons protected. All employees are afforded the full protection of 11C. For the purposes of this act, an employee is defined as an employee of an employer. Pardon me. Who is employed in a business with his employer, which affects commerce. The Act does not define the term employee. However, the broad remedial nature of this legislation demonstrates the clear congressional intent that the existence of an employment relationship for purposes 11 and C is to be based upon economic realities other than upon common law. Right, and going on. For purposes of Section 11C, even an applicant for employment could be considered an employee. Further, because this speaks in terms of any employee, is clear, also clear that the employee need not be an employee of the discriminator. The principal consideration would be whether the person alleged the discrimination was an employee at the time of engaging in a protected activity. So I guess this is a subcontractor. I guess. I'm not an attorney. I'm just reading the regulation here. In view of the definitions of employer and employee contained in the Act, employees of a state or political subdivision thereof would not ordinarily be within the contemplated coverage of 11C. Okay, great. Right, and then it goes, right. And then it goes down, right? Unprotected activities, right? Well, some of the... An employee's engagement in activities protected under the Act does not automatically render him immune from discharge or discipline for legitimate reasons. At the same time, they established a violation of Section 11C. Employees engaged in protected activity need be not be the sole or primary consideration for fine discharge. So let's say that, okay, you made a complaint to OSHA, but then guess what? The person decides not to show up to work for a week. It might not be a complaint here. All right. No help. And then proceedings. All right. Filing complaint for discrimination. Who may file? A complaint of election 11C discrimination may be filed by the employee himself or by a representative authorized to do so on his behalf. No particular form of complaint is required. Complaint should be filed with the area director responsible. Timing. This is important. An employee who believes that he has been discriminated against in violation of Section 11C1 may, within 30 days after such violation occurs, file a complaint with the Secretary of Labor. I would not wait for the 30 days. I'd do it immediately because they might have discriminated you prior to, let's say, you got fired. They might have discriminated for you for 2 or 3 weeks before that, and then you are... Now you're up, with that. And they need not have to fire you, Sophie. Right? I tell you what, I have to take this phone call. I will get back to you in a moment here. I'm going to go to commercial break.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Polzel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant, that's Safety Wars. Join a safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Polzel, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now, he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all. With his engaging storytelling and expert analysis, Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Polzel and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars.
The Safety Worship. It does stream live on the radio and on the streamers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Polzel and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
Sorry about that, everybody. And let's get Jessica in here. OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
People always want to hear that. And by the way, we are one of the listeners out there for us is on satellite radio, Shady 45 on Sirius XM. And he puts his kid, who is much older now, put him on the air there. So anyway, there may be circumstances which would justify tolling of the 30-day period on a recognized equitable principles or because of strongly extenuating circumstances, right, where the employer has concealed or misled the employee regarding the grounds for discharge or other adverse action, or where the discrimination is in the nature of a continuing violation. Dependency of a grievance arbitration proceedings or filing with another agency, among others, are circumstances which do not justify tolling the 30-day period. So, now, this is all along and all well and good here with this. But when we talk about whistleblowing and things of that nature, under the OSHA Act, right, this is what they're talking about. Now, the thing is, when you go down here and you go down the table of contents here, OSHA is in charge of like over 20 different areas here as far as whistleblowing, 20 different, over 20 different federal laws. OSHA takes the initial thing report. Right, they may be part of the investigation and everything else, but no, with that. Anyway, that's what's going on there with that. All right, with whistleblowers. And now, on to our next story here is, right, we're with that background. So here we have the U.S. Department of Labor, and this came out today, I believe, this press release. U.S. Department of Labor to offer whistleblower program webinar to educate Southeast stakeholders, employers, workers, and federal on federal protections. This is a webinar on June 26, 2024. Again, here it is. Whistleblower Protection Program enforces whistleblower provisions, 25 whistleblower statutes. So I'm probably worth it. It's July 18th. It was today. I don't know with that release number. Okay. So it's June 18th today. So this was released. Again, now you could get into a little bit of trouble here with, if you rely solely on HR, human resources in your organization to, worry about this type of stuff, which is normally what happens, that's where you're going to get into trouble. Because how do you know if you have the human resources normally does not, most organizations, unless it's their own employee and their own people, doesn't assign work, doesn't manage the work. They're a, for lack of a better word, necessary evil, like us. Like safety professionals. That's at least how they're portrayed, how they're seen. So what ends up happening is you have people out in the field doing the work and they're like, well, and things, well, you know, I don't like so-and-so because he reported a safety issue, and it doesn't even have to be to OSHA. He reported a safety issue and now I'm going to go and get him. And we're not going to give him overtime. He lost out on the overtime over the weekend. Guess what? Now you violated the whistleblower protection because now you have a whistleblower complaint. Could happen. Just something that you need to consider here with this. Now, and here's a free webinar. It's for free. It's for me. Let me clear off some of the board here. We have a lot of open windows here. I know. Did I go to go a little too deep here with the governor here? I don't think I have. Did he know or not? I have no idea. Right. However, you have to remember. You need to. Words mean things. You need to write things correctly. A federal administrative law judge has upheld the Department of Labor's finding that a Houston crane and rigging services provider who violated federal law by firing a company truck driver on June 5th, 2020 for refusing to exceed safe driving limits set by Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. All right, so this is, again, another thing, wrongful firing. You have the right to refuse unsafe work and to violate. You don't have to, if your employer tells you violate federal law, you don't have to violate federal law. And this is what I tell people on the projects I'm working on. Well, my employer told me not to use fall protection. Well, your employer is violating federal law. The OSHA Act and all these regulations. Take your chances. This is a big issue also in New York State here. With this, because if you're a confident person, and we go into this all the time, if you are a confident person, it's your rear end on the line here. If you're you're the confident person for fall protection. Well, guess what? Someone gets killed, and it's because of your negligence. That is a criminal act. Not in New York, Hannigan Terrace Reed in New Mexico. Spending 18 months in jail now. Why? She was, in effect, the confident person, the person in charge, and there was a problem, right? Alec Baldwin, Russ Productions. Now she has a problem. She's in jail for 18 months. The people who told her to act that way and not to have safety meetings and not to have safety training and not to do this, not to do that, don't worry about the guns, worry about the regular props. There's scot-free, except for her direct supervisor. Everybody else, she got it in writing. Right? She got all this crap in writing, and, now you have a problem. So OSHA found that the company fired the employer illegally for exercising their protective rights under the Federal Whistleblower Protection Program, and the department's regional solicitor in Dallas presented this case during a formal hearing in Houston, October 14, 2022. So 1.5 years later, more than 1.5 years, 1 year, 8 months later, the judge issued a decision and ordered the company to pay the former truck driver almost $15,000 in back pay, interest, and compensatory damages. The company must also expunge the former employee's record and post a notice to employees. Basically, they got to go and tell everybody they done screwed up. I don't know. Again, and this is all on the public record. So do you really want it on the public record that you're firing employees for doing this? I don't know. We cover this story. Here we go. That. Okay, this one just came out. Again, we had mentioned over the last several months on industrial hygiene issues. So it's estimated by model, and this is not Jimmy's numbers at all. It's estimated that 50,000 employees are killed or die of work-related illnesses every year. Based on their current models, this is what OSHA says. And they could go and do a deep dive with that. Maybe one day we will on that. So, again, there's a lack of interest, it seems, on industrial hygiene issues in the workplace because a lot of employers are like, well, you're selling me a statistical issue I might come up, and 30 years they may or may not get cancer. Well, guess what? I'm not going to do an industrial hygiene audit today. We got something that might happen. And by the way, the person making that decision is usually in their mid-50s. And they're either going to sell, they're the owner of the company, they're going to sell it, or they're going to be retired, and they're not going to be able to, they're not going to worry about it. Yeah. Plain and simple. I don't know. You know, with this, here we have, after Sandusky pork processing facility workers seek medical treatment for ammonia exposure, federal investigators identify 43 safety violations. Oh, we should have held this one for tomorrow. So let's see what they are. They assess them, and we're not going to go through all of them, $528,000 for this. OSHA cited again. So what this sounds like is that the employees went to hospital themselves. They didn't, they might not have followed the company known about, followed, or one might not have existed on how to manage this situation. Now, we do at JCP Technical and Safety Wars, we have plans already in place to teach you how to manage accidents. Give us a call, 845-269-5772. You too can have that those plans. The agency assessed the company with this. Okay, so what are we here? Lack of fall protection, noise exposure, inadequate permit required confined space procedures, lack of an emergency eye wash or shower, lockout tagout procedures, no hazard communication plans, electrical safety related work practices, failure to mark all exits, unsafe electrical equipment and installations, lack of lockout devices, lack of PPE, unsafe walking and working surfaces. Serious violation at one point for failing to protect employees from bloodborne pathogens, and had a penalty on that, which is currently being contested. And let's remember, all of these things that we're talking about are proposed fines. Now, let's see what this is. I'm interested in seeing how many pages it is. 83 pages. You gotta love it. No. I don't know what to say here, right? And they're all small things, I guess. Let's go to the summary page. We'll scroll on down. Yeah, all little tiny things. 167, that, right? Well, on that. It's not all of them. Now, this is what the issue is. Training. With this. Were people actually trained? Were your supervisors trained? Did you actually know about it? Did you say, oh, well, we're not going to worry about it because nothing ever happened before? We don't need to worry about this thing called OSHA. OSHA is ineffective. I hear all this stuff. Now, if you're a safety professional managing this stuff, again, all, there's one repeat, I will go into this tomorrow, one repeat for $63,000, but I don't know. Seems like very small penalties here. And that's all I'm going to say here. We're coming up to the end of the program here. Here's a local story here. Department of Labor, try that again. Department of Labor recovers $84,000 in back wages and damages to from Jersey Shore steakhouse owner who willfully denied to pay, denied full pay to 13 workers I read less remembered. Basically, salary laws are changing on July 1st unless there's an injunction issued here. So basically, a lot of the people who are paying, you're paying salaried, are now going to be, you're going to be paying overtime. U.S. Department of Labor has recovered more than $84,000 in back wages and liquidated damages for 13 workers and assessed $4,459 in penalties after its investigation determined a very popular Jersey Shore steakhouse owner violated federal overtime regulations deliberately. And I'm not going to mention the guy's name because for all I know, one listener probably here knows them. The division also found that the employer failed to pay non-exempt salaried employees overtime and did not maintain required payroll records. Again, I don't know. I mean, this is fairly common, unfortunately, with this. And let's see how many more minutes we have left here. Okay, we're going to go and go to our outro here. We missed Flag Day last week, but, you know, every day here is Flag Day. Right, I got a comment here just now. What are you talking about, chipmunks? Yeah, we had a chipmunk in the house. You know, it's pretty funny. Now, the war against the chipmunks, maybe we should have chipmunk safety war. So that would be funny, huh? And hold on. Been a while since we've done this. All right, and we will be seeing you, God willing, tomorrow. And have a great Wednesday. We're Juneteenth tomorrow, so you know, enjoy Juneteenth if you are celebrating. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel, and let me get off of here. Hold on. Sound is not working. We will cut it off. We will go in right here.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.